Morning.
So you never did talk to me then? He started to talk to me.
I did it right in front of
me. Oh, okay.
This was the agreement. Oh.
Pension Commission will come to order. Appreciate members making these meetings. I know for you rural members, this is no big deal, but for us suburban urban members, you know, 8 o'clock is.
Oh, come on!
Is there a bed sold?
I'm a morning person.
Your child gets up early.
6:30, so he can play computer games.
Well, we're not going to. Good thing all those teachers aren't here today, because they'd be wondering why your child is playing computer games at 6:30 in the morning. But we won't go there, Senator Bedsall. Okay, we've got three or four issues we want to deal with. We're going to try to be done by 9. Representative Smith, where are we on the omnibus retirement bill number 2?
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to. How was our motion framed yesterday? I haven't seen
that the Senate could kind of keep proceeding and the House was going to think about it over the evening. The Senate is scheduled. We're going to hear it at 9 o'clock. Okay. Sometime this
morning.
Not
reduced
about 9
to
o'clock.
Language yet.
Yeah, it's okay. Been not reduced to language yet.
Well, then maybe today's motion could be similar. I do have just a couple questions I'd like to ask of Larry Martin, and I guess if I'm satisfied, I'm certainly prepared to at least speak for myself, and that would be to help you proceed along the path that you choose. Mr. Martin, within the amendment, just a few questions. A yes or no will suffice, but add to it if you choose. Is the... Now, the TRA employee and employer contribution increase of 0.5 each with a 0.3 increase in benefit accrual rate, is it contained in the document?
I'm sorry, could you, is the...
Let me just give you some bullet points. Let's go through them one at a time. Satisfy me that, that we're addressing increases. These issues.
Yes, members, the contribution rate increases are in Article 1 of document 307, which is the revised document that you, the revised document that replaces the 301 document that you were looking at yesterday. We've cleaned it up so that it's clear that the MSRS general contribution rates are good for a full year. The MSRS correctional and state patrol are phased in on the schedule that they suggested in 207. It also, you were concerned about the PERA authority to change contribution rates in the future, and we've tried to address that. If you look on document 307 on page 7, starting in line 9, so document 307, page 7, line 9, the contribution rate increase or decrease must be reported to the Pension Commission Chair and to the Pension Commission Executive Director on the February 1st before the July 1 scheduled change. And it goes into effect if we do not recommend against the rate change or don't recommend a modification in the rate change. So we have a window from February to July to we will know what PERA plans to do, and we'll have a window I'll respond.
Mr. Chairman, that adequately takes care of my concern on that point.
The TRA contribution rate increase and the benefit accrual rate, yes, that's in the bill. That's part of Article 2. The contribution rates are... The contribution rates are contained on page 15, starting with section 7 up on line 2 and running through. This is the employer contribution rate. The employee contribution rate is on page 14, section 6. And the employer contribution rate is on page 15 in section 7. The formula change, the benefit accrual rate change, is in Section 8 of Article 2. That's on the bottom of page 15. And that's the point 3. For the level benefit, that would be a shift from a 1.7% formula to a 2% formula. And this is prospective service, post July 1, 2005 service only. For the rule of 90 tier, it's a change from 0.15 to 0.18 for the first 10 years and from 1.7 to 2% for the after 10-year period. So the same 0.3 increase also applies to the rule of 90 tier. Your third bullet point is the consolidation of the Minneapolis Teachers Plan, and that is provided for in the bill. It's also in Article 2. The primary language would be in Section 9 on page 18, where there are a number of provisions related to the various particulars of a consolidation, the transfer of assets, the transfer of service credit, and liabilities, the transfer of records. There are a spinoff of that as part of the contributions that are needed to fund that. On page 15, there is the extra contribution that is to be made with respect to the Minneapolis Teachers Plan. This is the one-third, one-third, one-third split of an extra contribution between the City of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Public Schools, and the state. And we have that language still needs to be this is page 15 of the bill. The blank still needs to be specified. I do have language with me today that would clarify that. The intent is that it would be 0.26% of the TRA covered payroll,
okay,
or roughly $8 million per year. Your next bullet point has to do with the current state aid that goes to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund, and is it redirected to TRA? And yes, that's also in Article 2. It pops up in a couple of different places. One place where it's referenced would be in Article 2, page 11, section 3. Rededicates aid to that previously went to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund and goes to TRA. It also occurs in the specific provisions in Chapter 354A primarily that give aid to the current Minneapolis Teachers Plan. For instance, on page 31 of the 307 draft, this is Article 2, Section 21. This is the most significant piece of aid that goes to the Minneapolis teachers, the $12.9 million amount. If you look on page 31, line 24, the $12.9 million that has been going to the Minneapolis Teachers Plan will be going to TRA on behalf of or with respect to the Minneapolis Teachers Fund. That would be an indication of that. The next bullet point has to do with the amortization target date.
The bullet points he's going through is a list of things that had been typed up that members had seen.
Thank you.
And senators are sitting there going, what bullet points?
Members, the
senators are always sitting there going.
And I didn't bring mine.
The amortization target date for TRA is reset. You can find this on page 54. It's in Article 2. It's Section 41 of Article 2. It's on page 54, starting on line 35. The operative language is actually on the top of page 55, and it says the established date for full funding is 2035. So that would be a new 30-year period to amortize the unfunded of TRA. TRA currently does not have an unfunded, but would have an unfunded by virtue of the benefit increase and the consolidation. The MRF contribution is redirected when no longer necessary for MRF. Yes, that does occur. It's in Article 2. And it is on, it's Section 10 of Article 2. It's on page 22, lines 22 through 35. Currently, the State Department's bill, the House version of the State Department's bill is what I looked at, is budgeting about $8.1 million for MRF. It has a total cap under current law of $9.1 million. And this redirects any difference, any amount by which the MRF money drops below $8.1 million would go to TRA on behalf of the Minneapolis teachers. So if we have some future savings over the current level of the current MRF funding, that would be redirected to TRA on behalf of the Minneapolis teachers issue. Any deficit, the next bullet point is a question, is any deficit covered by the state and local contribution or Minneapolis property taxes? And
page 15.
This would be page 15 again. This is the one-third, 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 the extra contribution. Page 15, lines 13 through 26 do impose an extra contribution. And in the case of the Minneapolis School District and the City of Minneapolis, this could be funded out of any of their resources or revenue streams, but property taxes definitely could be the source of the extra roughly $2.5 million contribution that has to be made.
Now, members, that the way that's written, it says one-third, one-third, one-third. So theoretically, that could be a third by the state also, as that's drafted. So that's that $8 million split up three ways. And the reason that language was chosen is the what we thought were solutions back in the early 90s were one-third, one-third, one-third solutions also. With the consolidation, this one would be final.
The second to the last bullet point question has to do with the pre-69 benefit change, and is that funded? The pre-69 special adjustment is provided for in Article 3 of the 307 draft. We found on page 57. The actual funding of it is on page 57, section 2 of Article 3, starting on line 28. It has an $11 million per year general fund appropriation to TRA. The cost of the special post-retirement adjustment is being funded from the general fund, and the special post-retirement benefit is conditioned on the receipt of that funding. So it is funded from a general fund. And then the last question has to do with the potential for softening the property tax impact of the various employing units. And that is the last article of the bill. This would be on page 84, Article 8. There's a currently unspecified appropriation of an unspecified number of dollars for the purpose of offsetting some of the impacts of the bill, and I assume that Senator Pogemiller in the Finance Committee will eventually fill in the blanks, both as to dollars and what impacts are going to be funded by whatever dollars might be available. So that's the placeholder language.
Some members on the Senate side will be aware of this. There's a $25 million one-time appropriation that is on the bottom line left in the Senate budget that was in Tax 2 in an education reserve account, still sitting there, and I'm hoping the Finance Committee would be willing to use it for this purpose. And also, whatever the early retirement bill doesn't cover on the $11 million, might not cover all of that, then use part of the $25 million for that also. And we're fully aware that the House budget may not have room for this right now.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Members, the only other change that was made in the 307 draft as compared to the 301 draft to correct a drafting problem, this has to do with Article 5, and if I could direct you to page 64, lines 20 through 24, this would be an example. There was a question about whether the change in the deferred annuities augmentation clearly and cleanly made it applicable only to new hires, and we've redrafted that language so that it talks about if an employee became an employee before July 1, 2005, the current law applies, and if an employee initially becomes an employee after June 30, 2005, then there's no augmentation. There was some reference to having the status of being a plan member in the prior language, and that was causing our confusion. This uses the somewhat more precise language and hopefully is now clearer. If it's not, we will continue to try and craft the right language.
And you have an amendment?
For
page 15.
Yes, for page 15,
Smith moves 313. Mr. Martin.
Members, you've just been handed LCPR 05-313. This is drawn to page 15 of the 307 draft, and it attempts to fill in the space, the blank that's included on line 616, and it's the 0.26% of pay figure, and it's the 2.26% of the statewide TRA pay. So that makes the bill, this draft, conform with the actuarial work that TRA shared with the Pension Commission yesterday. 0.26 of about a $3.5 billion TRA payroll is the $8 million figure that we've been talking about.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion adopted. Anything else to clean it up?
I think so.
Okay. Representative
Mr. Chairman, that's fine. Let's get on with it.
The intent is to, we're going to hear it in the Senate Finance Committee this morning. And if I don't show up on the Senate floor, they didn't like it. They're still hammering me. So, okay, why don't we then move to Senator Kelly and Representative Greiling, Senate File 1865. You've been doing some work on that. And members, let's find out what how Senator Kelly has changed that and then try to make a determination. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much. There should be a -279 amendment.
Senator Kelly, one sec. I had received, just for informational purposes, I had received from the Minneapolis Teachers Fund a memo. They had asked, when the House put their language in regarding Minneapolis Teachers Fund, the Knobloch provision in the State Department's bill, I asked Minneapolis, how does that work? And they asked their actuary to do some work, and this is the memo they got back. So that's just for informational purposes.
Okay, that's helpful.
So, and this is regarding the language that's in the House State Department's bill.
Send Michelle there on
that. Senator Kelly, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, members, the 279 amendment attempted to respond to at least what I understood to be some of the concerns that the commission had regarding the earlier bill. This amendment narrows the request to the commission down to two key items. One is permitting superintendents who are hired from other states to opt into a defined contribution plan rather than a defined benefit plan. And it narrows it to just superintendents and just superintendents hired from other states. So that that portion of it is much narrower. It doesn't have the interstate agreement piece that was in the earlier bill as one of the options. So in dealing with new hires, this bill addresses would address only the creation of an opportunity to participate in a defined contribution plan for new superintendents from other states. Then the second piece of the amendment addresses a very small, I think the number is 2 superintendents who were hired from Wisconsin and have an interest in purchasing service credit. So that portion of the amendment limits it to superintendents hired from Wisconsin during a one-year period of time and who have remained in active service as superintendents in Minnesota since their hiring in the early part of the 1990s. And the superintendent in Hopkins and the superintendent in White Bear Lake are the two that I know of who fit into that permission to purchase service credit. And it does not, this language does not permit double dipping with any service credit that they may have earned in Wisconsin.
Mr. Martin, any comments?
Members, Mr. Burek, I think, prepared this language and may want to.
Mr. Burek.
Members, I was the one who prepared the 279 amendment. Some issues that I would mention to you. As drafted, it does apply solely to school superintendents who had previous service as a school superintendent in another state. A concern you may have, though, is that in the future, this may wind up being expanded considerably. And I would assume this is not something that TRA would favor, given their general opposition to expansion of coverage by defined contribution plan. So you may be concerned about what might happen in the longer term there. Regarding the specific purchases of service credit, some remaining questions that you may wish to dig into there is, it would appear that both of these individuals, and the language is on page 4, paragraph B, both of these individuals began service between 93 and 94, presumably are still here. So these individuals would have been covered by the various full actuarial value service credit purchase provisions that were repealed a few years ago. Maybe it was last year. So one question is why these individuals did not take advantage of that opportunity while it was offered. I also note on page 4, lines 5 and 6, that the payment procedure would be under the full actuarial value methodology, that's 356.55, that was repealed last year. The commission members may be concerned about opening up that window again. If you allow any individuals to purchase under that procedure, there's likely to be pressure to allow other individuals to purchase under that procedure. The general concern that the Pension Commission had with that methodology was that it may provide subsidies. It may not be a good estimate of the full actuarial value.
Sir. Members are having a hard time hearing. Mr. Burek?
If the commission is concerned about that particular provision, we could revise it to allow a full actuarial value purchase under the current methodology rather than the repealed methodology.
TRA, want to make a comment? Welcome.
Morning, members. I'm Gary Austin, Executive Director of Teachers Retirement Association. With regard to Mr. Burek's last point as far as the methodology for calculating the cost of purchase of service, both of these people are post-89 hires, and so the rule of 90 does not come into play in the calculation. So the calculation methods, I think, are relatively similar. So I don't think that's a big deal one way or another. With respect to the amendment in general, I do have some problem with allowing these people to elect not to be members of Teachers Retirement. TRA, as all of our pension plans, has 3-year vesting, which is a very short vesting period, meaning that new people coming in only have to work 3 years to be eligible for a pension from TRA. But this is very narrow in its construction, but as Mr. Birick said, certainly there would be probably some interest in expanding this in the future. The purchase of service provision, as far as we're fine with that language, I don't think we have a real problem with that.
What would be wrong with having an expansion in the future and having this set of employees that, you know, higher, I would guess the highest paid employees in the school segment? What would be wrong with a defined contribution
plan? Well, first off, the defined contribution, the IRAP plan, has different contributions. You have a lower employee contribution of 4.5%, and you have a higher employer contribution of 6%. So there's some degree of preferential treatment there, for one thing. And also, certainly we are not interested in getting into the whole issue of choice, of allowing people options, irrevocable options in this whole thing. Again, we would not like to see that expanded to our entire membership.
Mr. Chairman.
Question. Senator Larson.
Mr. Rutland, what would the salaries be of these two individuals? Do you have any idea?
I don't have two individuals.
We're now talking about the second part, Section 4.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, I guess I don't have that number.
150 range?
I would guess.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, somewhere in that range, but I could not tell you today.
Between 150 and 200, would you say?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, I would be guessing if I tried to say for sure.
I don't think up to 200, because isn't Minneapolis or St. Paul the highest paid? And I don't think they're at 200. What's Minneapolis at? 165. St. Paul a little higher, maybe. So I think it's certainly not over 150.
No, but Mr. Chairman, that's the beginning, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't we just get a sense here?
Senator Larson, Senator Pogamino, I'm Charlie Kite with the Superintendent Association. I think those salaries are right in the range of somewhere between 140 and about 155 to 160,000 at the highest.
Thank you. Senator Larson?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I really question those figures. Maybe we could have some of the other severance pay benefits and all that. You know, it's kind of frustrating to me, and I've been dealing with this issue on this retirement because of the high five and seeing some of the – we noticed some of the abuses that were uncovered by TRA when we had, I think, three superintendents retire, and one of them was pretty abusive, I thought. But we're going to continue to pursue that because I think that that some of those abuses are going to be rectified. And I think, Mr. Chairman, on this issue, I'd like to move that. We lay this on the table. I just don't think we want to set a precedent for these two superintendents for other people to be coming in and changing some of our philosophy and some of the things that we do here. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we lay this bill on the table.
Okay, Larson moves to lay it on the table. Let's just talk about that section for it doesn't seem to me that the precedential nature of this is too significant. I suppose it could be other states than Wisconsin, potentially, but maybe Mr. Austin could just give us a little sense of, if we're talking about just Section 4, give us kind of the precedential nature of this and how TRA views that. just section four now, not the first part. This is the purchase.
Section four is very isolated, structured for two people, and we don't have a problem with that.
What if, though, how about the idea, though, that, all right, if we do it for two for Wisconsin, could we end up with 10 for other states? Or, and if we did, is that a, how do you see that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, TRA was always an advocate of purchase of out-of-state service at full actuarial costs, so we don't necessarily have a problem with that.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, the previous discussion that we had on this, didn't we talk about the value of having people come in from the outside sometimes and that there was some recruiting done from other states or that we should be doing some recruiting for superintendents as well as teachers?
Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, that's the reason for the first part of the bill. And we did try to work with TRA to accomplish the goal that we were trying to accomplish, to provide some flexibility for the recruitment of out-of-state superintendents, but just keep it as narrow as possible. And certainly Mr. Burek and Mr. Austin are right, is that somebody could in the future ask to have that piece expanded, but that's not the goal right now. The challenge right now is the turnover of superintendents and the need to at least have the option available for those superintendents if school districts in Minnesota are trying to attract them to this state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly, and if Section 4 was adopted, then would these two people stay in Minnesota rather than go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, that's my understanding. The superintendent in Hopkins has said, I'm going to have to leave because I have to go get additional service in Wisconsin to get to the pension goal. He doesn't have to leave. In order to achieve the goals he has for his pension, he would have to go back to Wisconsin and obtain additional service credit in Wisconsin.
But, Mr. Chair, Senator Kelly, if Section 4 is adopted, then he will not go to Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I think we will have changed the odds dramatically as the full actuarial value is pretty expensive, and I actually haven't asked Superintendent Kramer the question, if I get this done, are you going to pay this and stay? I didn't put the question to him that way.
I kind of would like that assurance. Since we're doing this particularly very narrowly for two people, I'd like to know if those two people are committed.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, Superintendent Kramer and I started our jobs, mine in the legislature, his as superintendent, about the same time. So we've been working together closely for a long time. I'd sure like to keep him. And this is my best shot at doing that.
And, Mr. Chair, if he goes, are you going?
Maybe I'll reconsider my motion.
Oh, excuse me, you don't have to answer that.
See, I'm Representative Murphy. I'm, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure which way to answer that question.
Okay. Why don't we separate the two issues and just see what happens? Would that be okay? Or does everybody want to vote the whole thing up or down? Not up or down on the table.
Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to vote on that motion.
The whole thing? Okay, sure. So we have the Larson motion in front of us that
table.
279 be laid over for further consideration. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Chairs in doubt? All in
division. I think it takes three on each side.
Right, that's correct. That's correct. All in favor, to lay it down for further consideration, raise your hand. It's down for further consideration. There's just three on one side. So,
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Just you caught that, Representative Greiling. You need three to do anything on both sides, and since there's three on this side to lay it down, that's pretty much decides it, I think. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Okay, Senator Bedsold. Well, why don't we wait on yours? We have people waiting.
Here. That's fine.
St. Louis. Representative Smith, yes. You want to try. There's two amendments to the to the big thing that to the 307. Representative Smith moves 207.
Mr. Chairman, yes, please.
Mr. Martin.
Members, the document 207 that's being passed out is a compilation of the work that the commission did on Senator Betzold's bill, Senate File 995 or 996. This relates to the maximum coverage salary for pension purposes. And this reflects the work that the Pension Commission did previously, back probably in April now. The operative language that you really ought to be looking at.
Wait one sec. Actually, I need to read. Okay. You know what? Now I'm thinking about this. There is a possibility. Okay. So the Larson motion did not pass. There's an outside chance this could change slightly. Because your motion didn't pass because there weren't three votes on the Senate side. Does anybody want to make another motion on that?
To adopt like section
Senator Bedsold moves to adopt section 4.
Right. I'll move to adopt section
Senator Bedsold moves to adopt section 4. We're back on the superintendent thing. Okay. On the Bedsold motion, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
No.
I can see the lips. The motion did not prevail. Okay. It's the same vote. Okay. Mr. Martin?
Yes, members, we've dealt with the issue earlier during the session of the maximum coverage salary for pension purposes. The language, the real operative language, is on page 9 of the dash of the 207 amendment. Currently, there's a limit of 95% of coverage of the salary of the governor that functions as a maximum for coverage salary for pension purposes. The current 307 draft that was adopted by the commission earlier increases that amount to 110% of the governor's salary. The issue here is the addition of some additional exemptions to the cap in its entirety. And there are two exemptions proposed here. One is on page 9, lines 30 to 32, and that's anyone who's not subject to the local government compensation cap that appears in section 43A.17, subdivision 9. The other exemption that's proposed is on page 10, line 9, the director of the Duluth Port Authority. The balance of the language merely ties the various definitions of covered salary in the various pension plans. Also includes a cross-reference to Chapter 356. When I was looking at the statutes governing other states and trying to find out what they do with salaries, it dawned on me that someone looking from somewhere else here trying to figure out what our regulation is of covered salary would never necessarily know to look in Chapter 356. Similarly, public employees might not know. They have to look in two places. The cross-references clean that up.
Looks like this kind of tidies up what the provision we have in there. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed. Motion adopted. So that's part of the 307. And then one more. Is this me or
yes,
is this
Smith? This is you.
The Historical Society wants to be in the early retirement provisions. Has to be.
Mr. Chairman, how many people are involved in that?
Historical Society? Bedsold moves to 311.
I
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Senator Larson, we don't know how many people would take advantage of this, but we're guessing that it would be a relatively small amount.
Less than three or four?
Yes.
Okay, members. On the Bedsole motion, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, now let's do St. Louis Park. Ms. Vanek? This is the officer who lost his life in Iraq, and the PERA board dealt with this issue yesterday. Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair and members, Mary Vanek, Director of PERA. The board did consider the issue of making an exception on the one-year marriage requirement to allow the payment of a survivor benefit. And their position is that they oppose any exception to the current policy that requires at least 1 year of marriage for a death that occurs outside the line of duty associated with specifically police and fire fund covered employment. So it would be police or police law enforcement or firefighting activities. They further stated that they would, that if the legislature decides to extend the payment of a benefit in this instance, that it be funded through some other source other than the pension fund.
And do we know the dollar amount involved here?
Mr. Chair, the total required reserves for the current value of the benefit is $346,478.
$346,478?
Yes, and the refund that would otherwise be payable is $1,832. So,
if we do nothing, that refund is available.
Yes.
Would you repeat that, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Vanek? The refund that's available is $1,832.
Repeat the other number, the 200 or 300?
$346,478 is the cost of the reserve that's necessary. If we do nothing, the likely circumstances is that a refund would be taken?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Is there a reason not to take the refund?
Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Representative Thiessen?
How big is the fund?
Representative Thiessen, you can't twist those.
No, all right.
You can, but you should not. Senators get in trouble when we do that.
So. All right.
Thank
Sorry.
You, Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I don't remember specifically police and fire. I think it's around $2
billion. Billion?
Billion.
Okay, Mr. Martin, there's two possible, well, there's Mr. a Burke. Lot of possibilities. Mr. Burke, 317, 316, what do they do?
Mr. Chairman, okay, you do have both amendments. These are amendments I put together yesterday to try to provide some possible solutions to it, although the commission may wish to consider some others. What the 316 amendment does is it would provide a...
Chair? We don't have the 317.
Yeah, we've only got 316.
Well, okay. Where's 317?
Do you have them both over there?
They're down here.
Mr. Chairman, I can describe the 316, and the 317 is a minor variation of it, which I can describe the difference. What the 316 amendment does is it would provide a police and fire a para police and fire survivor benefit to the spouse of this individual. But in subdivision 5 on page 2, it would put a cap or a limitation on that benefit. Basically, what is proposed there is the commission could determine the total benefits this individual is getting from other sources due to this death in Iraq. And we were given information from PERA this morning that the individual is receiving a survivor benefit from the federal government due to this death of $993, or approximately $1,000 a month. for life. Now, that benefit is worth, in terms of actual reserves, approximately $230,000, because the individual is in their early 20s, and this would be therefore payable for another 50 years or more. So the approximate reserves for that are $230,000. It is expected that this individual also has life insurance under the military provisions, and that that life insurance is likely to be $250,000. So this individual from other sources is likely to receive benefits of value in total of, well, just from those two sources, of $480,000. So the commission, therefore, could use this amendment, inserting some blanks here, to limit the police and fire survivor benefit to some total amount when included with these other benefits. So these other benefits are worth at least $480,000. If the commission, for instance, on line 18 were to insert $500,000, then the total benefit payable from the police and fire fund would only be $20,000, just the residual, the difference between these two numbers. So the commission could use that to create a cap. Now, the 317 amendment is identical to the 316 amendment, except for an additional subdivision, which would have the City of St. Louis Park pick up some fraction of the cost of the benefit that is paid by parapolice and fire. And that is also in a form of a blank to be filled in. So the commission, if it wanted to, could have the city pick up the whole value, half the value, a third of the value, whatever, by the city. So those are what the two amendments would do. Now, Ms. Vanek also suggested that perhaps they would like some language that would cut off the benefit if the individual were to remarry. Now, I don't have language to do that, but that issue has been raised. Mr. Chairman, I turn it back to you.
Thoughts by commission members?
Is there, Mr. Chair, is there a line of duty definition in the statute somewhere? Or is that just...
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the law book in front of
me. The answer is there is.
There is.
It's a question of...
How specific is it?
I think it would be a stretch to say this person was in the line of police duty. They were obviously...
Line of military duty.
Military duty. Mr. Wardlow?
Mr. Chair, I have a different question. The spouse, is she entitled to military health benefits for the rest of her life since she was married?
I should know that question, but I don't.
Senator Bedsold?
I think so. I'm not up to that at the moment. I'm sorry.
My guess is she is. I think she is.
Maybe Ms. Vanek has something on
that. Ms. Vanek, do you know?
Okay. Chair,
well, I'm sensing some reluctance on the commission. I suppose we could have, if St. Louis Park wants to do something, they could pay the full value to police and fire if they wanted. We could use the 317 to do that, with or without a cap. Is the city of St. Louis Park here?
Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Latz and I are the authors of the bill. The chief of the St. Louis Park Police Department is here, the city manager, and nobody from the city council is here. So the chief is here, but I doubt that he could commit the city to a particular course of action.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, we're trying to determine. Congressman Sabo's office sent me a description of the death benefits, and I haven't had an opportunity to check. We're trying to determine whether the $993 a month is a lifetime benefit or is subject to remarriage.
Okay. Senator Larson?
Not the widow eligible for Social Security?
Apparently not. Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair and members, under Social Security, a benefit, a survivor benefit is only payable to a surviving spouse under the age of 60 if there are children who are dependents.
That's the value of the benefit she's getting elsewhere.
Okay, and thank you. Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair.
And I think what we'll do is if we do something here, it would be for not the package that may or may not become law, but for the conference that Bedsold and Smith are working on. I think if we did something on this issue and also on the next issue, the Bedsold issue, we should do it in that context of that bill. So, Senator Bedsold.
Mr. Chair, I'm with the 317 amendment. Now, I don't know quite the numbers we need to put on page 2, lines 18 and 25, but I would also like to add whatever appropriate language to cap at least the PERA benefit if the surviving spouse remarries.
Okay, so the motion is 317 with additional language that deals with the remarriage. And what percent do you want to put on line 25?
I don't know. I'd have to ask.
Well, this is suggestions. You want the St. Louis Park to pay the whole amount,
right,
or a portion of the amount, or whatever St. Louis Park doesn't pay will be eaten by the fund.
100%.
So Bedsold moves 100% on line 25. And then do you want to put a cap on line 18 or leave that up to St. Louis Park? They pay whatever they pay to cover, and that's the amount of the benefit, maybe.
From the testimony, there's at least $480,000, I believe, from the federal benefits.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Vanek informs me that if the surviving spouse remarries before the age of 57, that the 993 would be terminated. So I have no clue how you do the actuarial calculation on the speculation about remarriage, but that would affect that, I would assume, affect that $400,000 number.
Well, if we put 480 on line 18, what does that do?
Well, the expected, Mr. Chairman, members, then the expected benefit from para, police, and fire would be zero, since he's already getting $480,000 elsewhere. If you put 580, then the para benefit would be 100,000. 680, the para benefit would be 200,000, maximum para benefit.
What have we done, Ms. Vanek? Over the years, we've done a benefit for officers killed in line of duty. 100,000 rings a bell to me. This is back in Chairman Don Moe days. I remember discussions of all this.
Are you referring to the public safety benefit?
No, it's not funded from the pension fund, I understand, but we apparently have a provision that we... Does somebody know that, Mr. Sox? Does somebody know?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Stockstead said it's $135,000 is the death benefit.
Death benefit. For it's police and fire or just police? Police and fire. So why don't you make it $135,000 over the 480?
Okay.
615.
480 plus 135.
So on line 18, it's $615,000. And on line 25, it's 100%. And then the language that terminates this on remarriage would be added. Representative Smith, are you comfortable with that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I am, but I'll probably vote for it, like so many other votes one looks at around here.
Well, is there anything?
Well, if I may,
I mean, because this would be you. This would be Bedsold and yours call in a conference committee ultimately.
I know. That's what, let me ask a question, Mr. Chairman, if I may have one or two. And if I wasn't listening, forgive me. Did we establish what the benefit would be had the man qualified without coming here?
Ms. Vanek, if the pensioner had qualified, in other words, they had been married a year, what would the benefit be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the monthly benefit, if the marriage had been for a year, would have been $1,747.
And the reserves?
And what's the reserve on that?
Chair, the reserve is $346,400.
So it is that number, okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, so the effect then of the amendment, should it pass, is that the state, if this becomes law, what we're recommending that become law is that the state would be setting a sum that the widow should get as a variance, if you will, or an exception.
About half, 165.
The state is saying what she should get, but it's saying that the state won't pay it, the city will.
The fund won't pay.
The fund. You're correct, Mr. Chairman. If we were to do nothing, the city could choose to do that anyway. Isn't that correct?
No, I don't think they could contribute on behalf of the family. I don't think so. I think they would need authority to do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, not the state, but could the city
just pay a benefit of that amount?
Yes.
Mr. Martin?
Members, I'm not sure what authority municipalities have, but there is a prohibition on local pension funds that's in Chapter 356 that generally prohibits local governments from setting up pension plans other than what are authorized by state law, and that might have application.
Mr. Chairman, the last question, and so then the effect of the bottom line effect of this amendment would be to just give the city the authority that they don't have to make the payment.
And specifying the dollar amount.
And specifying the amount of that
correct.
Payment.
I think that's what this would do.
All right. Well, then I guess to answer your question is no, I'm not comfortable with it, but I'm not going to stand in the way if the balance of this commission chooses to do so.
Well, what do other members think? Representative Murphy.
Ms. Vanek, Mr. Chair, Ms. Vanek, could you refresh my mind on why we have the year time period on marriages before death?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, Representative Murphy, this is a long-standing provision. And I do know that the history that I have been told is it was really to prevent deathbed marriages, to take advantage of the pension system. It is a rare occasion for a benefit now to be paid for us to have to deal with a benefit related to a marriage less than a year. But it is a long-standing position. The board really looked at it from the perspective that it is current law. They don't support exceptions to current law. So if there's a broader policy change to be made here to eliminate the 1 year, then maybe that needs to be looked at some point.
And Mr. Chair, as I recollect my experience on this committee, we have not strayed from that current law.
That's correct. Well, there's been two. The commission has not. There's been a couple instances where somebody added an amendment on the floor that became law. I think it's two instances. And interestingly, in those two instances, the party who died was not in the line of duty. One was a snowmobile accident, and one was something else.
Mr. Chairman? That is correct. There was at least one case where a St. Paul firefighter was killed recreating on a snowmobile. And the decision was made that the widow, who had not yet been married for 1 year to that St. Paul firefighter, was entitled
by special legislation to the full survivor's benefits. So I think the question this commission should consider is whether that circumstance is more fair than a situation in which a police officer died in Iraq, arguably in the line of a duty to the country, if not directly to the community that he hailed from.
Right, but if bad decisions were made in those other two instances by the legislature, not by the commission, but by the legislature, that does that justify? I mean, that's what you're basically arguing, that since somebody decided that you can do this for someone who's not in the line of duty, you certainly should be able to justify it for somebody who is serving our country.
Mr. Chairman?
That's a fair question.
Mr. Chairman?
Are you a lawyer? Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, with respect to the proposition that the decision would be a bad decision, quite apart from the appropriateness of the previous cases, as Ms. Vanek said, the policy behind doing this is to prevent deathbed marriages. There is no question that that is not the issue here. So it's not a bad decision from the point of view of trying to protect that policy, that we are against folks taking advantage of a deathbed marriage to add on pension benefits. What we're talking about here is that but for this individual being called up pursuant to the commander-in-chief's decision and being sent to Iraq where he was killed attempting to protect the lives of other soldiers, his spouse would have been eligible for this benefit. The timing here of his being called up to Iraq is the only issue. And since that was pure happenstance, this is, from the point of view of the policy that's being sought to be protected, this is not a bad decision.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I can make this work. I'll withdraw the 317 amendment.
Betzel withdraws. Does anybody want to offer anything?
No.
Thiessen,
can
offers.
I ask one question?
Do you want to offer the 317?
Can I? I'll offer to ask a question. How about that?
Okay. You can ask a question without offering it. Representative Thiessen.
From what I'm hearing from the discussion, this situation of a police or fire person killed in the line of duty less than 1 year has never happened before.
Sounds about right.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Senator, Representative Smith.
I'm curious. Do you have any data or even anecdotal information? Take the military aspect out of this. How many cases have existed in the past where somebody's married less than a year, and because of the law prohibiting receiving the benefit, they've lucked out and simply not come here with a legislator asking to bend the rules. Do you have any data on how many potential pension recipients have been shut out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I tried to back into something of that nature and was unsuccessful and really be able to give you anything. We are paying survivor benefits out of the police and fire fund to a few hundred people. But those benefits are not only related to death in the line of duty, death with over a year of marriage, not in the line of duty, but also disability. So anybody who goes out on disability and dies while receiving the disability benefit in the police and fire fund, the surviving spouse is automatically protected. I apologize. I wanted to get that data, but I had to go into every single file to look at it, and I didn't have an opportunity to do so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, another question. Have you relied on this year issue? Have you ever relied on this when someone has come forward and claimed pension benefits and having been married less than a year? In other words, has a sham applicant come forward, and if so, how many of those have you experienced?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we provide background information to all the police and fire members that this one-year marriage provision is a fact of law. And there, as a result, I don't believe we've been approached by others to try to get to seek a benefit, even though the marriage hadn't lasted a year. I know of no instances where we've experienced that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then I would expect the law is working, that it to prohibit someone from entering a sham marriage in order to shake down the pension fund, it probably is working. I guess I'm just would think out loud that if we're planning on passing this and giving this spouse of the decedent a benefit, then perhaps I would think you would have the ability. Well, let me ask this question: do you receive death notices of death on your pensioners so that you can adjust your books? I would assume, do you receive notices of death?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, we receive notices from family members. We also do a regular check. I don't remember if it's monthly or quarterly. We have an automatic process to go out and check against a nationwide system the occurrence of death of anybody who's receiving a benefit from us.
Mr. Chairman, so then would you have the ability to send out notices when you receive the death penalty to the surviving spouse, if any, that if you're married less than a year, but if you're really married and it's not a sham, you should come and apply for a benefit, so you could send out such notices. I guess my point is, if members of the commission, if we're planning on bending the rules, and I realize the decedent was a soldier for our country, but if that's part of the aspect here, and if she's got the ability to send out notices, maybe we should, as a general rule, if there are legitimate marriages, we should reward the surviving spouse with just pension benefits. I guess I'm having trouble with the motion, but I'm through.
Well, right now we have nothing before us.
Mr.
Is there a motion before us?
There's a motion before you, 317.
Representative Osment moves 317 with the 615 and the 100%?
Correct.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
We need a little more enthusiasm. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
Motion's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Smith, I have to go upstairs. There's two outstanding issues
if
you would handle. One is the Bedsold motion. And these both, I think, should be handled on the Bedsold-Smith bill,
okay,
not on this other one. And it's the Bedsold Social Security one. And then I think Representative Osment has been working with folks on the potential pilot for firefighters. And I think there's been an agreement to study it and talk about it over the summer.
Correct.
But I think on the record, we'd like to know that the statewide organizations would be willing to work on it over the summer.
Correct, Mr. Chair. I apologize to Mr. Stocks that I have not had a chance to talk with him since a late yesterday discussion I'd had with other parties. But what I'd like to do is, because we know that this situation is going to continue to be coming up in the future, and the implications that it has right now is that the solution has to do with the pension. And I believe that the issues are really way outside of the pension issues. It happens to be a way of helping to resolve it, but it's really not the problem. And I would like to look at that issue further over the summer and see if we can't put some definition to what is the problems that we're really dealing with. Members, what we're talking about is where we have volunteer firefighters and paid fire departments, kind of the in-between. We don't really know where they really fit. They're individuals that have been trying to, communities have been trying to protect themselves underneath a volunteer-type mechanism, or and they really need to transition into a paid fire service, but there are not really enough calls there to justify it.
and how that, where that change takes place. What is the definition between volunteer and paid? All different kinds of questions like that that I'd like to really look into. I would like to know if they would be okay with the organization to cooperate with that type of an inquiry.
Mr. Stockstead, before you start, I just want to inform you and the rest of the audience that three of the House members have a mandatory caucus in 15 minutes. So tell us what you need, but be brief, Mr. Stockstead.
Talk very fast, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, first of all, for the record, my name is Mike Stockstead. I'm the President and Executive Director of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. In response to the question, Representative Bosman, absolutely. When we met in your office a couple of weeks ago, that was a commitment I made to you back then, was that absolutely there's a lot of issues, a lot of solutions. We'd be willing to work with you and the other parties. I've also spoken with Mr. Bill Gillespie, the executive director of MPPOA, who has a larger membership in this fund than we do, and he would like to be a part of those discussions as well. So I think that this is a good option to work it over the summer. And if I could, Mr. Chair, just 2 seconds to answer your previous question on the last issue. I've been on the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Executive Board for 21 years. We have never had a case that, to my knowledge, where a firefighter has died when he's been married less than a year that hasn't come before this commission. So that would have been one.
Thank you. You need anything else?
No.
All right. Stock said thank you.
Chair, if I could on
Representative Osmond.
Would Mr. Zickman come forward? And Mr. Zickman, I'd like to look at this issue that you brought forward, but expand it beyond just the question of pension issues, but also on with regard to how, what is the real problem that brings your concern before this commission? And as, are you willing to have us expand this beyond just the question of that you had with regard to a pilot program?
Mr. Chairman, members, yes, we would, and we thank you for that leadership. I've already spoken with PRA staff and the League, and they'd also like to be invited into those discussions. So I very much look forward, and thanks again to the commission members.
Okay. Commission members, and if we have commission members who would like to participate in that, you'd let us know so that we can make sure that people are at the table and in a discussion that want to help us resolve this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, since I'm the author of the bill here, I'll be more than happy to participate. And I believe Representative Westerford might have an interest in it, too. So.
That's great. Thank you.
We should keep him noticed. Also, Representative Osmond, I talked to Mr. Zickman prior to this meeting. I'm available if you need my help as well. All right, let's move on to the last issue, Senator Bessel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoglund asked me to revisit the Social Security coverage, and Mr. Burek has a memo. If I could just briefly summarize what the issue is before us. The legislators who were in the old legislators plan, which was a defined benefit plan, did not have Social Security coverage. And I guess under the assumption that they were getting enough of a benefits under that plan that they didn't need it. I think people ought to have Social Security coverage, and in fact, it could cause significant problems if a legislator dies and the surviving spouse is not covered, which is exactly what happened when Representative Kendall Tremba died, and his widow, now Representative Mary Eleanor Tremba, did not receive the benefits she would have had not Representative Kendall Tremba never served in the legislature because he wasn't paying into Social Security. We made a change a few years ago to allow some members of the old legislators plan to get into Social Security coverage, but they had to pay both the employer and the employee contribution. Now, the bill that I introduced basically said that the employer had to pick up the employer's contribution, and it's not quite that simple to do that because what we're all constitutionally, what we're doing is giving an increase in compensation to legislators during their current term of office, which we can't do. But more important is that those 10 legislators who did opt to get Social Security coverage and those who did not, the ones who did would be given sort of preferential treatment now because they opted in it and knowing that they would have to pick up both sides of it. Mr. Burke did prepare an amendment which would have the effect of having the employer pick up the employer's contribution, but then scaling back the benefits so that it works out. One of the other things that we might consider is that there are approximately, I think, 70 two current legislators that are on the old plan who do not have Social Security coverage, and at some point we may, if this amendment is adopted, we may want to try to find a way that if they want to now get into Social Security coverage so that they would have to pay for it, and the employer would have to pay for it, but they would scale back their benefits to do so, that may be possible. And I'd actually defer to Mr. Burke if I misstated anything or anything that needs to be covered. But that's the issue, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Burke.
Members, I'd point out the two amendments that you have before you, which are the 290 and the 291 amendment. The Senator Betzold mentioned the 291 amendment. The 290 amendment would simply add an effective date to the bill. What the bill does is it says for those members who are now members of the coordinated legislators plan, the employer is going to pick up the employer payment for Social Security. The 290 amendment simply adds an effective date. There is none right now. Senator Betzold mentioned this compensation issue. What the commission might choose to do then is to set a date in the proposed effective date provision for perhaps January 1, 2007, or some other suitable date following the next House general election. Now, the other amendment, the 291 amendment, which Senator Betzold discussed, is an alternative to 290, and that amendment also has an effective date to be set by you. And it also downsizes the benefits after the effective date of this law. Now, that downsizing would make the coordinated plan similar to what has happened in other situations, other past situations, where you had a basic plan and then created a coordinated plan. When you created a coordinated plan in all these prior situations, the legislature downsized the benefit because with a coordinated plan, there's this understanding that Social Security is going to be there. So you have three sources of income in retirement: Social Security, personal savings, and presumably the legislator's plan. So what the commission in the past has done is downsize the benefits, downsize the contributions accordingly in creating a coordinated plan. Now, I should make sure you're aware that right now there is a coordinated plan. It's been in effect for a few years, but that plan right now pays the same benefits whether an individual is a basic member or a coordinated member. One thing that would be accomplished by downsizing the benefit for the coordinated plan is it would lessen the likelihood that other legislators in various groups would want to have another election to get back into a defined benefit plan. In particular, the group I'm thinking about was the group back in 97 when in 1997 the legislature passed the law which said that all new legislators are going to be in the unclassified plan. And if you're in the unclassified plan, you have Social Security coverage. And in addition, any legislators hired, elected before 97 were given an option to choose Social Security. If they chose Social Security, they also became members of that unclassified plan. So back in 97, the only way that legislators could get the Social Security coverage was to get into a defined contribution plan. Now, due to things that have subsequently happened, we have a legislator's coordinated plan, which is a defined benefit plan, which if this bill were to pass, would be providing a far better pension benefit to legislators and giving them Social Security on the same terms. So therefore, there would be a lot of legislators who elected in 97 to join the unclassified plan in order to get the Social Security coverage would now say, I would like another election to get out of the unclassified plan and get into this coordinated members plan. So that is another possible benefit to downsizing the benefit in the legislator's coordinated plan to do away with the incentive to swap swap plans. I hope that's good.
Senator.
Downsizing the benefit, but I didn't hear any indication how much that was.
Mr. Beard.
Mr. Chairman, that's in the 291 amendment. What I did was I set the benefit, the accrual rate, at 1.7%, which is the rate currently paid, level benefit rate currently paid in coordinated programs like MSRS General.
Mr. Chair, what I recommend is that obviously there's a small group of people, but they're all legislators who have an interest in this. Perhaps what we can do is, we can have, you can shop it around your leadership and the members in your caucus and in the DFL caucus, who have an interest in it. I can certainly bring it forward, in the Senate to find the people who may be interested in this and just see where we're at. And if there seems to be an interest in the leadership and the effective members to do something like this, maybe we can work something out on the bill that you and I are carrying. Okay. If people want to put the kibosh on it, no. But it is important. I think at some point members are going to wake up and realize I got to have Social Security coverage, if I'm going to take care of my spouse. And I think the 291 amendment does it. I don't think we can do 290 and the bill as introduced because that just basically takes away the it requires the employer to make the contribution for the 10 individuals, which they definitely would appreciate, but it doesn't do anything for the other legislators that are unprotected right now.
All right, very good. We'll do that.
So,
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to echo that. I didn't elect at that time because I had Social Security for my other job, but there were 2 years that I didn't get Social Security in the other job, and that made a marked difference on my monthly annuity or monthly check when I qualified in March for my first Social Security check. And I thought, boy, if I'd had those 2 years. Now, these people that did elect to go in then and so forth, they've been paying for 7 years or 10 years into the Social Security, both sides, and yet the people that came in after them are only paying the employees' share, and it's not right. I don't think it's right to continue that very small group to have to pay both the employer and the employee. So something's got to be done to make it fairer.
Well, could
Senator Betzel.
Yeah, and Representative Murphy, if you want to talk to the people in your caucus and Representative Smith and his, and then I think between myself and Senator Larson, I think we can figure out where people are at and see if that's something you want to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at the 291 amendment.
I'm not talking retroactively. Talking.
I know. But it'd be
the future.
But just eliminating the employer contribution creates more problems.
Yeah.
It helps those 10 people. It creates problems for the other ones who did not choose to make to switch over. So.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Senator Thiessen. Representative Thiessen. Sorry. Do we need to do that? Good point.
I'll move it, which is being presented right now at the Finance Committee. I'll move that whatever the number was, the 290,
307,
307 be adopted. As amended, be adopted.
As amended, motions before us. Any discussion? Seeing none. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails, and so be it. This meeting, if there's no other business, is adjourned.
Thank you.
If the benefits go down,
hey, everybody good?
And, they couldn't go down.